Welcome back, everybody, to the Business of Money podcast. I am your host, Nia Patrick, and I teach financial intelligence to solopreneurs through my Women's Wealth Institute, an online website dedicated to financial management for solopreneurs. I'm all over social media, and I am on YouTube particularly. You want to check me out there. This is where the post will show up, just the link to the website. You will not see a short or anything like that, but you might see an intro or something like that to the Business of Money of podcast. So check me out. Thanks for tuning in. If you are new here, welcome, welcome, welcome. If you are returning, returning listener, much appreciated for sticking with me this far. So let's dive right in. This episode is called Financial Leadership Starts With You. When you run a business by yourself, someone has to be accountable. Someone has to be responsible. And as a solopreneur, guess who that is? That someone is you. There's no board, no silent partner, no backup plan. Your business is your paycheck. Your decisions directly impact your lifestyle, your household, and your future. So financial leadership is a mindset, and it's not optional. It's not a suggestion, and it is the foundation of stability and growth. And it begins with clarity. Clarity about cash flow coming in and out of the business, revenue timing, operating expenses, those damn taxes, owner pay, and any reserves that you might have, and setting yourself up for in case of emergencies and you investing in your business's growth and expansion. Without clarity, you're guessing. And when you guess, the pressure's on, baby. I don't have time to guess. I live alone. I pay my own bills. I run my household. I make sure I've never been without a roof over my head, and I've never been hungry. No matter if there's something in the frigidaire visible or not, never been hungry, never will be. Eat anything I want, drink anything I want, move the way I want to, work where I want, work and don't work where I don't want. I've learned very early on that I'm in control. That's why I've been independent so long. I've been in relationships. I've been in cohab. I have one marriage, one live-in boyfriend. Neither one of those worked out because I'm a control freak and I don't mind it. I like being in control. I like the accountability. I like the responsibility. And I don't look at what other people are doing to measure myself against and say, oh, I need to do this or I need to do that. Nope. Because what you see on the outside, people's financial leadership is very misleading, right? So no need to go into how it's misleading. It's just that I see financial leadership as very misleading. And what looks like financial leadership is financial dependence. So here's the reality. Most solopreneurs operate reactively. The revenue hits, the bill gets paid, and the owner pay happens if there's any money left. And when revenue dips, the panic steps in. Like, oh my God, we're not bringing in enough money. What do we do? Or, oh my God, we needed to bring in X amount. We bought in this amount and we're running out of days to hit our milestone. And now we're living in inflationary times. Unexpected costs have risen and distress is real. And the stress, but corporations aren't stressed. They're making money hand over fist. Do you know why? Because they have a system and a structure in place. They're rising prices because they know consumers are strapped. I know they're strapped. I'm watching them come in to Walmart returning dumb shit. Literally, right? I'm watching people take receipts from other places, coming in, grabbing stuff, and getting cash because they're strapped. And does Walmart give to Walmart? Don't care. Walmart's a huge conglomerate. So businesses are rising prices because you rise prices to make sure that you stay profitable. And costs have gone up for businesses. Fuel costs, energy costs, labor costs are really coming down. AI, we went through a pandemic. There's a lot of correction right now. And if you don't know what's going on in the economy, you definitely want to stay with Women's Wealth Institute because they talk about stuff like that, right? So when we are looking at financial leadership, it's not a reflection of work ethic. It's a what you're doing and how you are operating is a reflection of financial leadership. So if you're saying to yourself, I don't understand how I'm going to or why this is happening, take a look in the mirror first and say, hey, what are you doing? Because financial leadership is about discipline. It is about structure. It is about creating systems so your decisions are intentional and not reactive. And when you lead financially, every dollar has a purpose. And this is what we mean by you make your money work hard for you, not you work for the money. Even in your business, a lot of people in their business are working for the money. They didn't make their business money work for them. So every dollar doesn't have a purpose. Your money are your workers, not your employers, not your contractors. Your dollars work for you. And they're supposed to work doubly hard so that you get the return you need for putting them into circulation. So your revenue is not personal income. It belongs to the business first. It supports operations, it funds taxes, it builds reserves, and then it pays you. That order matters. Let's chat about decisions. Expansion, only when the structure supports it. I built my digital products out. I had like 12 products, maybe 14. And I had services, about four of them. And I had already built out my two programs. And I had already knew I only wanted two programs. Money Smart Small Business and Women's Wealth Strategy. And it's 12 courses that I combined into a complete series for both. And then I took core courses and built them into 5-week intensives. And then I took those individual courses and placed them in each program so that when someone visits my site, they can try one course and decide if they like it or not. And if it gives them any kind of value, if they wanted to try the 5-week intensive, then they're committing to a longer program. If they decide they want to do the whole program, it's 12 weeks because it's one course a week. They may repeat one course, but they'll only repeat one course. They don't get credit for it. And I did that for both programs. But I took one program and I packaged them up. So that was a good thing. That way my courses are working harder for me versus me creating courses that have no consistency, structure, and I'm just throwing random courses out there. It was very planned and very well planned on top of that. But I used to be a teacher and I had to develop curriculum as well. So I had to organize curriculum and I had to create curriculum. So I have that background. ChatGPT helped me, but I already had a program. ChatGPT helped me create another program. And it was only based on courses I had already said I wanted to do, and then it helped me develop the Women's Wealth program. So it helped me put them in some type of order, and then it wrote my descriptions for me and my content. But the idea is mine, because ChatGPT didn't come up with the idea. I did. It helped me write it. Very different. Not unlike Articulate 360 or anything like that. Or me just using McGraw-Hill or some type of program where you're connecting a book and then I'm just using their content. I decided to do it myself and not be dependent on a third party. My services were maybe 5 services all broken up. And then, like I said, all my digital courses, my digital products were 12. So I had ChatGPT help me analyze my website and see what my profit would look like with all of my products and services on the site, and then break those services and products down into percentages. And it said to me that I was very heavy in services and that my other part of my revenue was coming from my courses and my digital products. But I had a lot of products to choose from, and people don't want choice. They need direction. And one, it said that you said you didn't want to be client facing, but you have all these services and they have a high price point. Like I had a $2,500 advisory service. That's going to tie you to clients. You said you didn't want that. I said, right. They said, drop your service price down. Very low. Something somebody wouldn't mind paying just at a drop. And now you're, and then only have one. And then use a booking form to flesh out people who are looking, losing, kicking tires. And then only offer your appointments 2 times a day. And then 3 times a week. That's it. And that keeps you out of client-facing territory. That's right. And everything else now is courses and digital products. Well, you got a lot of digital products. Package all those products into like 5 products. And now they have 5 or 6 products to choose from. And just bundle all of what you are selling. And here's how you're going to bundle them according to your structure and your foundation and your framework. And now they have 6 products to choose from, but they get a lot more in a bundle and then drop the price. I did that. And I'm like, and you can, and then it said, and you can let your programs, you have a lot of courses to choose from, but it couldn't see that I had one program and I just repurposed 12 courses. And then it was like, oh, brilliant. Cause that's what it was about to tell me. You want to take those courses and package them up 5 different ways. So I have 2 programs with 3 different entry points, 6 digital products that have anywhere from 6 to 10 different products within it that all fall under a particular category. 1 service, advisory, and then I have events, and I have free events and I have paid events. So my structure right now on my website supports any type of expansion, meaning any new products. Well, I'm not introducing any new products. I don't ever have to introduce any new products. So now my only expansion is my podcast and getting my episodes out and building my content library audibly. Because none of my products are audible products. My courses are visual products and you have to read. My digital products are all PDFs. My blog is written, you have to read it. My events are in person or online. So I had no audible products and decided to make my expansion be my podcast, where it's not visual, it's all audible. And then eventually you might see the transcript, but I doubt it. Let me tell you why I won't include the transcripts, because it can be copied. So you have to actually listen to it. So this is something you should be listening to on your way to work, while you're working out, while you are trying to gain some mini lessons or something like that. It's a conversation between us that's really private. It's just between me and you, the listener. And you're not listening as a group. You're not watching as a group. You're watching, you're listening independently. That's my expansion, but I have the structure to support it. And I've spent, the only money I'm spending is the my cell phone bill. That's it. That's how I make decisions on expanding my business. Now, my podcast was already a part of my business. I only had one episode up. It doesn't matter if somebody sees it. I only had one. Now I'm building that library. I'm trying to build it all in one day and release it. And then it just sits there. I don't know. I got quite a few to go, right? But that's what you want to think about in terms of expansion. Not going out and finding a brick and mortar. Not getting into another part of a business. Nothing like that. If you know your structure, you should be able to play with that structure to expand in lateral ways. Right? The next one is hiring. Then it says only when margins allow. As a solo business, I'm never hiring anyone. I'm never hiring an employee. Me personally. Employees cost too much money and I don't want to manage employees. See, I already lived that life. And so, well, how are you going to grow WWI? Through my products and services and partnerships and sponsorships. I can repurpose all of the content to say something different and put a slap a different face on the Canva cover. And now that's a whole brand new product. I can just move them all around. The content stays the same. Pricing, cash flow management, auditing taxes, things of that nature. Something that's consistent. So, but when you think about hiring, if the margins allow it and you want to grow through people, then you want to make sure that your margins allow that. Investments, only when cash reserves are sufficient. You got to give yourself the definition of what's considered sufficient. Then you're looking at a variety of cash reserve vehicles that can help you get to where you're going. And then this is where we have a tendency to get tripped up. And I can see how it's possible when there's money available. Lifestyle changes. Only when the business can sustain it. Now, you got social media telling you to go out there and lease the car in your name, get the house in your name, put everything in a trust, da 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 da. Those are all sound. It sounds great until it's done wrong. And then it hurts you and your business. Set yourself up a trust, but the trust doesn't pass through tax, whatever it probate. Because maybe you didn't have a will, so now it goes into probate, or you got the wrong trustee, or your kids are not interested in whatever. This, you got to look through that. So you want to make choices with certainty and not guesswork. Financial leadership also means accountability. You must review your numbers consistently, daily or weekly cash checks, your monthly financial discussions with yourself and then with those involved. And those whom you support, your 90-day cash planning, any tax allocation monitoring. On my Business and Money podcast, there's episodes on 90-day cash planning, monthly financial discussions, daily or weekly cash checks. There's all types of templates out there that I'll put out when maybe if I do a short, that's when I'll probably introduce some of my templates and things like that and guides and maybe on my Pinterest and things like that. Skipping reviews is not saving time. It's postponing any of your problems. Then there's another element of communication. If you have, or another element, which is communication. If you have a significant other or household relying on your income, financial leadership also extends to them. You share your business performance. You explain fluctuations. You discuss allocation of funds. You plan those slow months together. This builds alignment and reduces tension, and structure at home mirrors structure in the business. Now, unfortunately, one thing I notice that has always been something that families do, but for some reason, they're making it seem like it's new today with older adults moving back home to live with their family because the cost of living is high, home ownership is out of reach, people are losing jobs, they're trying to, you know, now all of a sudden a family needs to come together and blah, blah, blah. But Is everybody contributing? And if not, it's going to impact your business. Families who provide for their children, which is a luxury and a privilege to be able to pay for your kids to go through private school, public, you know, really good public schools, living in really good areas, sending them to boarding schools, sending whatever the case may be. But that if you did not equip that child with financial skills to be able to be independent as they get older, and we're not talking 20s, we're talking 30s, 40s, and 50s. And now you've sent them on their own, let's say 30s and 40s, you've sent them on your own and they still don't understand how to cope because they still need help. And we're not talking a little bit of help, we're talking significant help. They run up credit cards or they're still on your cards. And if you don't mind that, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm saying that your business is going to be affected by personal financial leadership. If you're able to do it, cool. But at some point, if your adult children, you aren't encouraging them to find their passions, be able to pay bills, show them how to pay bills. Don't put them in your business. Show them how to pay financial bills. Make sure all your documents are in order. This relieves you of some of that responsibility and now you're just oversight. But if something should happen to you, everybody needs to know where everything is at. And just saying, well, you know, they'll be able to find it. I mean, it's not really hard. Everything's all in one. No, it's not. They don't know how to read statements. They don't know how to read bank statements. They don't understand APR. They don't understand buying a car because you've been buying them a car. Nothing wrong with it if you want to give them that support. But when you give the support, girl or boy, they still should be able to do things on their own. And because they want to, and you're encouraging that, and they are more of a contributor. And even if they say, they're like, well, look, here you go. Here's my check. Take it, invest it, something. Or you're allowing them to live their lives and not be constrained with lifestyle choice, and they can have a lifestyle choice. However, and that's just the American fabric, because make no mistake, I'm part of the African-American community. This is here where I live. That's more of a norm for parents to be able to provide for their children. I love that. I love that. But the other communities, that's a normal practice for them. For the African-American community, it's becoming more of a normal practice. And back with older families, particularly here in Atlanta, it's a tradition. Right. And I like that. Mine had to get out and get and learn on their own because that's my background. So my perspective is everybody should be able to understand how to provide for themselves. And the family is kind of like the credit part, does financial support when times get a little tight and you need a little help and you need a little support. OK, but when people just don't work or people aren't moving forward or they're just not doing anything, that's because they are entitled and they have been enabled, and that hurts your business, period. They can't think for themselves. They always have to ask permission, or they're not sure of themselves. They're not allowed to fail. There's always a safety net that shields them from real life. And, you know, everybody wants to coddle their baby until their baby is 50 and still can't figure out how to pay a bill or can't figure out how to get their financial lives together and got really bad relationships, or they're just drifting, you know, because they become adults and they can think for themselves, and you want to make sure they're propped up for success. Now, you can start a business for them or put them into business, but you got to know their strengths and weaknesses and look at them with a very keen eye. Can they actually do the job, or is this something that's going to challenge them, or are they just going to show up and not really do anything, costing you money? Now you got to make the decision, should they be fired? Okay, well, they're still living in your household, then you fired them. Then you're going to tell them, go out and get a job? And you've been paying them too much money in the first place because you didn't look at it with a keen eye. This is where family businesses get into challenges and trouble because of the second generation. And this is why they say the wealthy family businesses go from shirt sleeves to collars to shirt sleeves again, because the second, third, and by the fourth generation, if it has not been protected by the very founders, or at least the secondary generation, the second generation, by the time it hits the third, fourth generation, they're back to working as regular workers because all the money is gone. And it happens in a lot of wealthy families. And it's just the nature of enablement and no financial leadership. Look it up. I'm not making it up. Look it up. Y'all know who some people are, right? So, many solopreneurs resist leadership because it feels restrictive. But leadership does not restrict, as I'm saying, it empowers. When you know your numbers, you can price confidently, you can forecast realistically, you can invest in growth strategically, and you can sleep at night knowing your business can sustain itself. All the guesswork disappears, your decisions become more straightforward, and it reduces stress. So let me be clear. If your business is your paycheck, financial leadership is not optional. It's mandatory. Someone must lead. Someone must be responsible. And that someone is you. So your next step is simple. Know your numbers. Sit down, make an appointment, know your numbers. Spend a Saturday. Look at your numbers. Ask questions. Write things down. Make some notes. Review them consistently and make every decision based on clarity as much as you can. And then communicate with anyone relying on your income and plan for the unexpected. Financial leadership is not a skill you add later. It's a mindset you must adopt today. And it's a learned skill. You have to really go against the consumer inside of you, the parent inside of you, the provider inside of you, and look at it from a strictly unemotional cohort business perspective. How is this going to affect the business? Not me. The business is the entity you're trying to protect. Not you, not the family, the business, because that's where the money comes from. And that money is your employees. How is it going to affect them? Once you can look at it from that perspective, your life is protected and your growth is much more manageable. So that's it. This is Nia. I am the CEO of Women's Wealth Institute, where your business is your paycheck. You can't afford to guess. Thank you for tuning into the Business of Money podcast. I will catch you on the next one.